Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Rimebo. Jeff, there's no more snow in the UK, so I've managed to make it in. I was temporarily defeated by the beast from the east, they were calling it, which actually, when you live in North America, you'd realise that it wasn't that beastly. It was only about 6 inches of snow.
Well, I tell you what, it was amazing to see the pictures, and I can imagine how, you know, London was just paralyzed probably because, you know, I've been over there a couple times when you get snow, and it's not a pretty picture, so glad everybody's safe. But back to work.
Back to work we are, yes, and we are going to tackle three more teams in our state of the franchise this week. We're going to look at the Houston Texans, the Denver Broncos, and the New York Jets. We'll take your questions in the mailbag on Inside the Huddle, but we're also going to look at some of the big news from around the NFL. We've just seen the completion of the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, where they run the rule over the draft prospects coming out in April and early May. We've got free agency coming up next week. The new league year starts on Wednesday, March the 14th, 9 p.m. UK time. I'm going to be doing a live blog on skysports.com again, so make sure you follow along on that, reacting to all of the big news as it happens. Jeff, let's start. Let's go back to actually when we would have probably discussed this last week, and Blake Bortles has signed a three-year contract extension or a three-year deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. It keeps him with the Jags through 2020. It's a three-year deal worth $54 million. It takes Jacksonville out of the market for Kirk Cousins. Your thoughts on that? Because they spoke very glowingly about Blake Bortles. We know they were going to be locked into this year if he had a wrist injury, but they've actually extended his contract. Your thoughts on Blake getting a longer look in Jacksonville?
Well, yeah, I think it's actually beyond a longer look, Neil. I think it's a vote of confidence. I think Coughlin and that regime, you know, Doug Marrone and Scott Milanovich, quarterback coach, and all those guys sat down, put their heads together, and looked at it, said, all right, do we want to get in the market, which is always, you're always going to overpay, always, because it's just the nature of the beast when you're talking about quarterbacks. And then beyond that, do we want to start over again? And I think they looked at where their football team is and how close they were this year to playing in the Super Bowl and think that with more time, more consistency, more coaching, more, you know, more of a lot of things that Blake frankly hasn't got in his career in terms of consistency in the organization, I think they feel like he can be a guy that can, you know, get him there. So I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for the organization.
And I guess they're looking at the whole team, Jeff. When you look at this Jacksonville team and Blake Bortles last year, 21 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, showed that he can do stuff with his legs during the playoffs. They're looking at a whole team because they were one pass away from beating the New England Patriots, and Blake threw that ball out there. It was, you know, it had a chance, and Stephon Gilmore makes an amazing play in the AFC Championship game. But Jacksonville probably weren't ever really in the market for Kirk Cousins. They've got $16.9 million of salary cap room. So for a couple of years now, Jacksonville have been right up there in terms of having the most salary cap room in the NFL. Now they're down in the bottom third. Only eight teams have a worse salary cap situation than the Jags. So they're probably looking at this as saying, well, we got to within one pass of the Super Bowl with Blake last year, and he was injured, so if we kind of work with him and develop him.
Yeah, I agree with you, Neil. I think you're 100% right on. I think it's their decisions that Jacksonville's going to have to make beyond the quarterback situation. You know, you've got some high-priced guys that they went out and got to get them over the hump. And, you know, you look at a guy like Marcel Darius, the first place I'd look, you know, is he worth what you're paying him to be a spot player? And, you know, those are going to be the hard decisions that they're going to make. And, that, you know, like the Browns are going to have to make in a couple of years, you get this window and you want to improve your team while you have the window, the financial window, and they have. And now it's how do we keep this group together? How do we find the little pieces that we need? You know, again, impact receivers, I think more playmakers on offense, and you know, continue to go forward as an organization.
Let's look at a couple of other big headlines. Jeff, I remember a couple of years back sitting with Thomas Davis in the summer. He was at that time the NFL Man of the Year. He had overcome, you know, those tremendously devastating knee injuries with the Carolina Panthers to become one of the best defenders in the NFL, a leader of that team. And Jeff, Thomas Davis said to me that, you know, it's always a production business, but you buy yourself extra time and you buy yourself extra chances if you're a good person and if you're not a troublesome person in the locker room. And here we are in the past week. We've seen Muhammad Wilkerson released by the New York Jets. We know he wasn't happy in New York last year. And we've seen Marcus Peters traded to the Rams. This is a trade that won't be rubber stamped by the NFL until March the 14th. But when it takes place, the Rams will send Kansas City their 2018 fourth round pick, 2019 second round pick, and they get Marcus Peters and the Chiefs sixth round pick this year. These teams don't want to always hang on to the malcontents, do they, Jeff? Even as talented as both those guys are pro bowlers, both those are all pro players, and the Jets and the Chiefs are happy to move on.
Yeah, and again, this is all about keeping the locker room, you know, environment, culture, whatever word you want to use, positive. And, you know, these guys are great talents. There's no question about it. Wilkerson's a great player when he chooses to play. You know, Peters shoots. I mean, how many times do you, again, I hate that term, shut down corner, but he's a guy that has that kind of ability. You just don't trade those guys unless there's issues there. And again, you know, we've gone over and over and over about Michael Bennett, and he's another guy that's, you know, looming out there on the trade block as, you know, the rumors are starting to circulate around the league and around people that I've talked to that, you know, the possibility that the Seahawks are going to trade him.
Yeah.
So you know, the more you rock the boat, the more you rock the boat, the greater the chances you're going to end up in the ocean. And you know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, Thomas Davis, I think, you know, Neil, that's a great point he makes. And it's too bad a lot of these young players don't get that, because there's going to come a day. Coach Vermeil used to say this to guys, say, hey, listen, your talent is going to keep you around here, but there's going to come a day when your talent, you know, can't outshine your personality defects and your issues, the baggage or whatever you want to call it. And so, you know, that's where you see teams moving on from these kind of guys and other teams taking shots at them because, you know, like if you think I think that Peters' trade for the Rams is dynamite because
me too, yeah.
What does Wade need more than anything else to make that defense work? He needs corners who can play man-to-man and can challenge and do that kind of stuff. And, you know, there's one of the best in the business. And so, you know, I think, you know, Sean McVay, what do you think? You're thinking, well, our locker room's strong enough, our culture's deep enough, you know, you can afford a couple of those kind of guys, but when you start having three or four and five of them, that's when it gets to be a problem.
This is when you realize as well that, you know, this time of year, and, you know, you always use that phrase, Jeff, this is not like collecting trading cards. You can't have every player you want, and teams have got to get to a salary cap this year of $177.2 million. So the Rams know that they're going to bring in Marcus Peters. Eventually, he's going to need a new deal. He's in the last year of his contract. So they trade away defensive end Robert Quinn to the Miami Dolphins. You can't have everyone. You can't keep everyone, which is why we're seeing some big names hitting the street this time of year, and we see it every time of year. Jonathan Stewart is another one. You're right about Michael Bennett. The Seahawks are reportedly planning to keep Earl Thomas, but they're going to look at trading Michael Bennett. You can't necessarily pay everyone. That's just the nature of the business.
Absolutely. You get to this point, and this is why we talk all the time about Super Bowl windows and about that small window of time that you have where it all fits together. The talent, salary cap, you know, all of it has to come, the coaching, all of it has to come together at one that magical moment, and you're only going to be in that window for a very short time because it's just the nature of business. Because when a guy goes from that first year, that rookie contract, to that second contract, that's when the huge jump occurs. When you have to go out and get a high price free agent, to fill a need on your football team, well, now your cap gets out of whack. And then, you know, it's going to take you time after, you know, to rebalance all of that. And we see it all the time in teams that, you know, look like they're going to be that, you know, that next quote destined, you know, dynasty team. And that's why there are so few dynasties anymore. And that's what makes the Patriots so incredible.
I saw Jeff, obviously the salary, the franchise tag deadline is pretty much now. So when you're listening to this podcast, we'll probably know all of those players that have been tagged. It looks like Le'Veon Bell is going to get tagged by the Pittsburgh Steelers again. They can't agree a long-term deal. DeMarcus Lawrence has been tagged by the Dallas Cowboys. We've already spoken a bit about Jarvis Landry has been tagged by the Miami Dolphins, Jeff, but it looks like they've given him permission to seek a trade. I'm struggling with this one because I think Jarvis Landry, I know he only averaged 8 or 9 yards per catch last year, but I think he's one of those sort of physical, emotional tone setters. He had 112 catches last year to lead the NFL. I don't know if the Dolphins are letting him kind of seek a trade and then realize that no one's going to pay him what he expects and he comes back with his tail between his legs or I don't know the plan. And it's made me now wonder, we're a couple of years in now, I'm not sure I know what Adam Gase's plan is, other than anyone who rocks the boat slightly is being thrown overboard, as you say, because they already got rid of Jay Ajayi and Jarvis Landry has, you know, been outspoken at times. I mean, I'm now wondering what Gase's plan is in Miami if they're going to move on from Jarvis Landry.
Well, I think this is an interesting one to me because one of the things about Jarvis Landry is he's a competitor and he's a tough guy and he's a winner. You know, I mean, he's the kind of kid that, in my opinion, that you want, and that's what makes this a little bit. Not shocking, because again, nothing shocks you in the National Football League, but it makes it surprising to me. You know, when you think about, you know, you're looking for guys, you're constantly looking for guys that'll do the work, that'll, you know, be unselfish, that will, you know, compete every week, that, you know, no matter what the score is, they're going to go out and do their, you know, give you what they got. And he's one of those kinds of guys. And so it is a little bit surprising to me. I wouldn't say, like I say, nothing shocks me, but it is a little bit surprising to me.
Jeff, let's look at the NFL Combine then, and I know you've been there a number of times in the past. You're a big fan of the Combine, not necessarily as the be-all and end-all of judging players. You are very strong, and a lot of football people are, you know, you've got to go back and watch the tape. As Jarvis Landry actually tweeted overnight, Jeff, and I retweeted it this morning and said, here's some perspective after the NFL Combine. He said the only time you run 40 yards in a straight line in the NFL is when you're covering kickoffs. So it is just a part of the process. It's just a piece of the puzzle. But, you know, where were your big winners and losers? Who kind of caught your attention? I mean, just let's start with Saquon Barkley, Jeff, the running back from Penn State. Look at this in terms of what he did. He bench-pressed more than Joe Thomas. His 10-yard split in the 40-yard dash was faster than DeSean Jackson. His 40-yard dash was quicker than Devin Hester, Odell Beckham Jr., Antonio Brown, Julio Jones. And his vertical leap was higher than Julio Jones. Impressive. Wow.
Well, you put it in that context, and you know, you say the guy's Superman. And he's pretty close when you watch him on tape because Neil, I watched that kid play probably 4 or 5 times this past fall, and in every single game, he made an impact play. And I mean, I'm not talking about a nice run. I'm talking about one of those kind of runs, whether it was on a kickoff return or on a play from scrimmage, where you just shake your head and go, "Man, oh man, did I just see what I think I saw?"
Right.
I mean, he's that kind of player. That's what makes him, to me, you know, he might be the first guy gone in the draft because, you know, we've seen what the value of running backs is. You know, it had been, quote, it all of a sudden it turned into a devalued position. Well, then you look at what guys like Todd Gurley and some of those guys have meant to their teams. And shoot, I mean, this is a guy that you just look at his testing numbers first and then go back to the tape. And certainly the tape is every bit as impressive as those testing numbers.
Yeah, Sean Payton said he's the best running back prospect in 25 years. He has a chance to be the first running back taken first overall since Kijana Carter in 1995. That didn't work out too well, but...
Let's not put him in the Kijana Carter category.
Both went to the same school, Jeff, but is he the best player in this draft?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's, you know, you look at him and you just say that if there's a can't-miss guy, it's got to be him. I mean, he's got all of the things you look for. And, you know, the other thing, Neil, that was impressive to me that you can't put a measuring stick on was the way he handled himself, you know, in interviews and the way he, projected to the media. And, you know, again, all of those things as we look at, you know, you just talked about Muhammad Wilkerson and Peters and Michael Bennett and those guys that, you know, sometimes can be distractions in the media. I thought this kid handled himself extremely, extremely well.
Who else did themselves a lot of favors, Jeff, in Indianapolis?
Well, you know what? It was a deep bunch. I really thought, you know, the story of the draft out of the combine, and I think it's an emotional story, mm-hmm. and it's a transcendent story. Is the young linebacker out of Central Florida,
Shaquem Griffin?
Yeah, I mean that when you watched him run that 40-yard dash and realize that, you know, that was a linebacker, a big linebacker, running 4.38. That is amazing, and then to think that kid played played his entire career with one hand, you know, and you watched him. He's more than a story. He's more than just a feel good thing. I mean, the kid really does have incredible talent, and you know he's got an unbelievable work habits and all the things you would like off the field.
If you don't know
that was, I guess. Feel good story.
Absolutely, yeah. If you don't know Shaquem Griffin's story, he was his brother actually plays for the Seahawks, right, Jeff? Shaquem Griffin plays for the Seahawks. So they were born as twins, and Shaquem had a congenital disorder with his left hand, and at the age of four, he had his hand amputated. But he went on to play college football at Central Florida. In terms of all the pass rushers coming out in the draft in 2018, he was ranked as the sort of second best. He had 7 sacks last season in college. He posted 20 reps of 225 pounds on the bench press in Indianapolis using a prosthetic hand attached to the bar. He ran 4.38 seconds in the 40-yard dash. That's the best mark for any linebacker in the combine since 2003. And Jeff, I got a couple of tweets on this asking about Shaquem Griffin, but one from Paul James, who it's a statement, not a question, from the mailbag. He says, "How amazing is Shaq Griffin at the combine? Some people use any excuse to do nothing, and this guy is smashing the combine with one hand. What a motivational and unbelievable role model for kids. I'd love to see him at my Colts, to be honest. He looks like a very good player as well." Jeff,
I think Pete Carroll's reaction to that 4.3 time was, you know, enough for all of us to just see that, you know, Pete was, I don't know if you saw it, Neil, but Pete was up in the press box where most of the head coaches stay during that thing because they don't want to be bothered by people, but. You know, just and he was pom-pom Pete a little bit, but he was like, yes,
yeah.
We saw that kid run that well, you know. So obviously there's an emotional tie there. I don't want to go overboard on that story because, again, I don't want to diminish it either. It's one of those kind of deals, right?
You want him to be a football player as well.
And he is a football player. Now, again, is he the first linebacker off the board? I don't think so. The guy that I love, and I love him even more after I watched him, and I've seen the kid play live, and I've seen him play live twice last year, Neil, and I've watched him on tape, and I watched him at the combine. There is a guard from Notre Dame, and, you know, it's hard to get excited, you know, at the combine about linemen,
yeah,
offensive linemen particularly. But Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame, Neil, I'm going to tell you something. With all the teams that need offensive line help, this guy is a stand in the huddle and be your starting guard the first day he goes to training camp. I mean, he is really, really an impressive player. He is so strong and so nasty and has such good feet. And he's been so well coached. His coach, Harry Hiestand, had been Lovie Smith's offensive line coach, or Ron Turner's offensive line coach in Chicago, and then went to Tennessee, then went to Notre Dame. He's now back in Chicago with the Bears. So he's had an NFL offensive line coach for his entire career. He's an older kid. I'm going to say older. He's not a come out early kid. He's mature physically. And like I said, you watch him, Neil, and he has that nasty, nasty streak that everybody loves.
Yeah, he's already been compared to Kelechi Osemele, the all-pro guard from the Oakland Raiders, so he's in sort of very good company in terms of that conversation. Jeff, I look at the quarterbacks, and maybe I've been doing this for so long, you know, talking about the NFL and covering the NFL, that I just chuckle when I hear some of this stuff, because Josh Allen, the quarterback from Wyoming, was throwing 70-yard bombs. And they said there were reports he could throw the football 90 yards in the air. He could throw it at, you know, 70, 80 miles an hour or whatever it was. It was ridiculous, whatever they were saying. And I thought, yeah, but the guy completed 56% of his passes at college. Surely there's a reason for that. Let's just pump the brakes a little bit on Josh Allen. And then Josh Rosen from UCLA, Jeff, who's been a bit outspoken in the past, he's having to deal with all these stories coming up again about how he had a hot tub in his room in college, and he's a rich kid, and so you know, it doesn't matter as much to him. And I just thought, these quarterbacks, we get too high on some and then we're too harsh on others, but this is the process that's going to play out over the coming weeks and months, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, anytime you're at that position, the scrutiny is going to be, you know, much greater than it is at any other position, and so is the hype going to be that much, you know, bigger than it is at any other position. But I think it is true that there are a number of general managers in the league that have expressed at least some concern with the issues, you know, about Rosen that you talk about. I mean, he was very, the kid as a young player in college was very outspoken about how he, you know, was, how athletes are getting ripped off in college, and
yeah,
yada, 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 all that kind of stuff. And so, again, you want to make sure that the guy that's the face of your franchise, which the quarterback is the guy that you can trust in the media. Now, again, when you talk about the other parts of it, you know, you want a guy who has, you know, who football, you hear it said all the time, you know, how many times did you interview general managers or coaches and they say, we want guys who love football.
Right.
And there's questions about whether, rightly or wrongly, because of Rosen's background, there are questions about whether he really loves football. Will he do the work it takes? Will he compete at the level it takes? You and I talked to Trent Dilfer, and what was the one thing Trent Dilfer said when he talked about making it in the National Football League? He said, young kids just don't understand the enormity of the position. Not the footwork, not the arm strength, not the decision making, the enormity of the position, the playing quarterback in the National Football League.
Yeah, that spotlight's going to be on all of these quarterbacks as they approach the NFL draft. Let's move on to our state of the franchise then, Jeff. Let's look at what team would be picking fourth in round one, but they've given that pick to the Cleveland Browns. It's the Houston Texans. So I'll give you the tale of the tape on the Texans, and then we can get into talking about them. They were 4-12 last year, last in the AFC South. Offense was 20th overall, 14th in rushing, 21st in passing. Defense dropped to 20th overall. They were last in scoring defense, 13th against the run, 24th against the pass. The Texans have quite a bit of salary cap room. They got $56.6 million of salary cap room. That's what, 2-4, sixth best in the NFL. So free agents, they're about to possibly hit the market. Tom Savage and TJ Yates at quarterback. You've got Andre Ellington and Alfred Blue at running back. They cut Brian Cushing from the defense already, and Jonathan Joseph at cornerback is a free agent. Jeff, this team, that's a, when you look at that record of 4-12, that's a little bit misleading, I think, when you think about the exciting impact that Deshaun Watson had and where this team possibly was going when he was firing on all cylinders, and then where they kind of ended up at the end of the year.
Yeah, and again, it's, here we go with the importance of one player. Yeah. But it's the reality of the business. And now, let's talk about this, because this one fascinates me. And I'm not against anybody. I want everybody to understand that. But the guy who led that defense, right, that went from a not elite, I wouldn't say elite level NFL defense, one of the top defenses in the league, to one of the bottom defenses in the league, how is he rewarded for that? He gets a head coaching job in the league. Don't you tell me what the heck's going on.
But Jeff, he did lose. You know what I mean? The mitigating circumstances there are that he lost J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, you know, and all, there was a lot of, there were a lot of players that you look at on that defense that, you know, Whitney Mercilus was banged up as well. I mean, he didn't kind of have all of his horses, did he?
No, he didn't, and in defense of him. But, you know, I mean, it just, you wonder sometimes. I mean, as a guy in the business that looks at the business and goes, I mean, there's some guys out there that have been grinding away and having success and being good for years. And
there are certain ones they want, Jeff. There are certain ones they want, and they'll let the numbers tell the story as long as they get who they want.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. Like I said, I'm not anti anybody, but I just think that sometimes I look at it and I just shake my head and go, wow, that is an interesting, interesting move. But let's get back to Houston. This team, I don't know, Neil, they worry me a little bit. I don't, you know, they're just, you look at them and you say, like I said, I mean, this team that looked like they had a chance. Mm. But it's always something with the Texans. You know, there's always, it's kind of like this undercurrent all the time. Can Bill O'Brien get along with anybody? You know, that was what they said at Penn State. Then it follows into the NFL. There's, you know, they had Dwayne Brown, and then they get rid of him. I mean, can anybody get along with anybody?
Well, Rick Smith, Jeff, Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien were apparently at loggerheads for the last couple of years, and now Rick Smith has stepped away. His wife was very ill, so he's taken time away from the team as general manager. Brian Gaines comes in to take over. But again, yeah, you're right. Bill O'Brien kind of has that reputation, doesn't he, of like, you know, rubbing people the wrong way, or not, or there being some kind of perceived conflict at the very least.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then remember Mr. McNair's comments in the media last year when he said, you know, we're taking back the prison or whatever that silly thing he said, which, you know, got the players all up in arms. I mean, it seems like with the Texans, there's always some undercurrent that you can't, you know, that keeps them from playing at the level that, frankly, they should play at, because this team, you know, is in a division where they should be, you know, better than they are. Now J.J. Watt, you know, is it going to be a healthy J.J. Watt? I'm a little concerned about J.J. Watt, because those injuries, especially injuries to your back, those are scary as you start to get up in your age and into your, you know, second half of your career. So I hope he's able to come back, certainly, because he's such a great player, but you know, you got, if you're the Texans or you're a Texans fan, you got to have some concern there.
You look at the Texans, they probably need some help on the offensive line. You listed out, when you look at draft needs across the board, people talking about safety and cornerback. Let's look at the positives they do have, Jeff. Your thoughts on Deshaun Watson? I know he's had a couple of torn ACLs now, but he was spectacular in that brief glimpse we got of him in his rookie year. And 19 touchdown passes. He ran for 269 yards and ran for a couple of touchdowns. Him and DeAndre Hopkins, add in Will Fuller, there's a nice trio, but there's question marks about Lamar Miller at running back. So there's some good and bad on the offense, isn't there? Potentially very good with Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, but then offensive line and running back is a question mark.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, Lamar Miller, is he a guy that that can be a bell cow back. That remains to be seen. You'd hope so, but again, for the Texans, it's all about Deshaun Watson and what he brings to the table. I mean, that dynamic leadership that he brings, that the playmaking ability that he brings inside the pocket and outside the pocket. When he is healthy, he is certainly, you know, a dynamic, dynamic player. And I think he has a bright future in front of him as long as they can get some offensive linemen in front of him. Because we've seen in that same division, you know, hot young quarterbacks, you know, get hit way too many times, and all of a sudden, you know, you start looking for another quarterback. So I think it's really important that they get the tackle situation solved. Those two guards inside have not been what they, you know, what everybody thought they were going to have. You got a 42-year-old punter. I mean, there's some things that these Texans have got to get straight.
And including defense, Jeff. I mean, this was once the best defense in the NFL, and it's taken quite a fall. And I guess there's, because of the injuries, there are question marks there. Even though there's a lot of name recognition when you look at some of the players on that defensive side of the ball. Romeo Crennel comes in as the defensive coordinator, very experienced, of course. But that's by no means a unit where you would say, right, all the work's done on that side of the ball, is it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, bringing Romeo back is a positive move for them. They got to get help, and again, you know, you look at it, and at what point does injury start to be a part of your profile?
We saw that because with the Chargers for years.
As much as I love J.J. Watt, and I love J.J. Watt as much as anybody except maybe Mrs. Watt, but I'm going to tell you, you know, how many games has he missed now? How much time has he missed? And he's not young anymore. So you're talking about a back, you're talking about knee, you're talking about things that are problematic. Now, he'll work his tail off, come back. You can count on that. But, you know, you talk about Jadavian the same way, because he's had injury history. And, you know, then you move on from Brian Cushing. Well, Brian Cushing, if I'm not mistaken, Neil, is the leading tackler in the history of that franchise.
Correct, yeah.
So, you know, there's... You're talking about your top level, your big dog players. You know, there's questions about all of them, and one of them isn't going to be there. There's no question that Cushing's gone. So, you know, I think this is a defense that's in transition.
And as you look at this team, Jeff, and you kind of alluded to it there a little bit, this was a team that would have been expecting to dominate in the AFC South for a number of years, but this division now is no pushover. You look at what Jacksonville have done, of course, last season. The Tennessee Titans made it to the Final Eight with Marcus Mariota and Derrick Henry doing their part on offense. You potentially have Andrew Luck back in Indianapolis. With all the holes that the Colts have on their roster, if Andrew Luck can come back healthy in 2018, they are a challenge every single week. So all of a sudden, this AFC South is going to be a headache for Bill O'Brien. I think the one thing that makes me think that Houston have a shot of being a playoff team year in and year out is just, Jeff, I thought Deshaun Watson was really special. So I think it's a tough division. But for me, I'm going to say probably, I feel like there's lots of areas of this team where I should say arrow down, but I'm going to say arrow sideways because of Deshaun Watson. But there are too many question marks to go arrow up at the moment for me. What about you?
I agree. I think... you know, right now I would say arrow down because you're talking about all of those factors. And, you know, I don't think it's like an arrow heading straight for the basement, but yeah. I just don't see, there's too many questions, right? There's too many concerns about guys coming off of surgeries, guys, you know, really, we all want to jump on the Deshaun Watson bus, but you know, he hadn't been on the road very long. I mean, so it's hard to say. You know, I mean, we've seen it in the past where quarterbacks flash, and then all of a sudden the tape gets around, and all of a sudden the second time through they're not quite as good. And now I can't tell you that's going to happen there, but again, it's all questions. The Texans are like this mystery team to me. There's so much so much has to go right for them. So many guys got to come back from injury. So many other things that are going to play into this, you know, as we look through the offseason. I think it's a team that has a core that's good enough if they're all healthy, right? And if everybody can get along, and if, you know, if it's a lot of ifs.
A lot of ifs. Deshaun Watson, Jeff, is we want to get on his bandwagon then, but his bus has got dodgy tyres. I guess what we're saying at the moment. Let's move on to the team that will pick fifth in round one, the Denver Broncos. So they were 5-11 last year, last in the AFC West. So they're going to go into 2018 looking to avoid another losing season, which would be, they haven't had back-to-back losing seasons since 1971 and 1972. So it's not a team that is used to being in the doldrums for long. So it's on John Elway to drag this team back into contention. Let's look at where they ranked. Offense was 17th overall, 27th in scoring, 12th in rushing, 20th in passing, 29th in sacks allowed, 31st in turnovers, last in the red zone. Defense was 3rd overall. They were 5th in rushing, 4th against the pass. And actually, Jeff, I'm just adding up here, 6 categories where they were the top 5 defense still in what was an imbalanced team. If we look at their salary cap room, they have not a bad situation. I'm trying to find the Broncos. They're kind of middle of the pack, about $27 million in salary cap room. Free agents that are about to hit the market: Brock Osweiler, Jamal Charles, Benny Fowler, Cody Latimer at receiver, Virgil Green. Defense has got Jared Crick. So not huge names that are about to hit the market. They are very much in the market for Kirk Cousins. John Elway won the last big quarterback free agent sweepstakes when he landed Peyton Manning. He was speaking at the Combine this week, Jeff, John Elway, and he made no secret of saying, our biggest transition from 2017 to 2018, if we want to be successful, is going to rely on us being better at the quarterback position.
Well, I think that there's a general consensus, maybe a unanimous consensus around the league, that this team has got to get the quarterback situation settled. And it hasn't been settled since Peyton was there. And this is a Super Bowl caliber defense. It is a very, 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 very average offense. And when you consider that they were that good defensively with an offense, it did not help them. They did not play, they couldn't play complementary football, couldn't run the ball well enough, couldn't convert on third down well enough. You know, so many things were not good enough offensively that you look at the team and you just say, you know, again, talk about that Super Bowl window. There's a team in the window, but the window's going to close here shortly. And so, you know, what are they going to do at receiver? Are you going to bring back both Emmanuel and Thomas? Those are questions that you got to answer. The offensive line, you know, the young kid that they put in at tackle, I thought played well early, but, you know, again, you know, they're Menelik probably, and again, I hate to say this, but I thought he was a disappointment the way he played. Somehow, some way, they got to get better on offense. They got to become a better team at playing to the strengths of their defense, because you've got a dominant defensive football team.
Yeah, I guess.
That all starts again at quarterback.
Yeah, CJ Anderson had 1,007 yards rushing, just 3 rushing touchdowns for him, though. Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, when they're both healthy, Jeff, are one of the best duos in the NFL. Elway said this week at the NFL Combine that he was committed to keeping both, which runs contrary to what we had heard from Emmanuel himself at the Super Bowl. It felt like he might be released. Looks like the Broncos are going to do their best to keep that pairing intact. But, Jeff, you look at, I guess, Trevor Siemian. You know, we've seen a couple of years now of Siemian. He was a 7th-round draft pick, and maybe he's played up to a 7th-round draft pick's level, you know, just middle-of-the-pack kind of numbers, too many turnovers. But the disappointment for me is that we've never seen any growth yet from Paxton Lynch, who was a 1st-round draft pick.
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting, you know, to hear John Elway say at the draft, I mean, at the combine, that they were going to keep Paxton Lynch and continue to develop Paxton Lynch. I mean, he's only been there 2 years. I mean, you know, everybody knew coming out of college with the offense he ran at Memphis and the things that he did at Memphis, there was going to be a learning curve. There was going to be a growth curve. And I think, frankly, that's what you get. That's the scary part about taking quarterbacks like him if they have to play too soon is, you know, they're going to struggle because it's just such a huge transition, what you're asking them to do. But to me, it's interesting that after two seasons, there's still questions about, or there are questions about whether they're going to keep a guy or not keep a guy. Mm. You know, so that I think that was an interesting, you know, little press conference that I heard Elway give. And, you know, look at this and you say, you know, again, if they can get Kirk Cousins, if they could get Kirk Cousins, this is a team that all of right now becomes a Super Bowl contender again. In my opinion, if they don't get the quarterback thing straightened out, and I'm talking about straightened out with a, I'm not talking about drafting, you know, Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold or, you know, Josh Allen or any of these young guys. You need a veteran. You need a veteran that can go in there and take charge of the offense and take charge of the, you know, the things that Peyton did that never reflected in his stats, you know, in his stats. We talked to Emmanuel in detail about what Peyton Manning meant in that locker room, in those offensive meeting rooms, and on the practice field. That's what is the part that so many times goes unaddressed when you start talking about players. You know, you need a this team needs a veteran presence on offense because they got enough leaders on defense. You know, they've got guys over there that'll take care of it. But they right now they're just, for me, they're rudderless on offense.
Reports out of the US, Jeff, suggests that Kirk Cousins is down to kind of four teams: the Minnesota Vikings, the Arizona Cardinals, the New York Jets, and the Denver Broncos. For me, for Kirk personally, I say the best two situations for him are the Vikings and the Denver Broncos. Teams that have got good defenses. Kirk's at his best when he's got weapons around him, and he can be that facilitator, that conductor in the band who's making everything tick and keeping everything ticking over. Would you agree that the best situations for Kirk Cousins would be Denver or Minnesota? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree because of the fact that you know, he's got better football teams around him in those two situations. You know, again, when you start looking at those, and I just want to talk in terms of those two football teams. If I'm Kirk Cousins, I want to know what your plan is for protecting me. Right. I want to know what your thoughts are about, you know, what we're going to do offensively. You know, you look at those two teams and you know, you got a Pro Bowl caliber, I think one of the most underrated players in the NFL at tight end in Minnesota. And you've got two receivers in Minnesota that aren't, you know, big names, but they're guys that have made a lot of plays, right? Now, Emmanuel and Thomas probably have bigger names than Adam Thielen. Excuse me. You know, but you got to look at what the plays that the guys have made. Now, where are you going to have the best chance to be protected? And I would be a little bit leery right now looking at that offensive line in Denver in terms of, you know, protection, ability to protect quarterback.
Why do you think Denver should go Kirk Cousins or veteran quarterback route, Jeff? Because fifth overall, they could get one of those rookie passers. Is it because of that whole Super Bowl window thing? And you know, they've kind of tried the rookie route before with Paxton Lynch. Why would you prefer veteran move for the Broncos?
Well, I agree. I think because of the fact that, you know, it's just so hard for a young kid coming out of college to stand in a huddle with guys that are 25, 28 years old and know that the clock is ticking on their careers and know that the clock, I mean, they get it. When you talk to Emmanuel, he gets it, right? He understands. He was very point blank when he talked to us about, he wasn't emotional about, hey, you know, I may be out of there because they can't keep both the Marriott and me. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. They get it. They've been through it. They've skinned their knees. They understand the business of the business. And now you're a young kid that, you know, it's just so much to ask a kid to go in and lead an NFL team early, and particularly a team like the Broncos, who have tasted success. They know what a great leader does, right? They know you stand in that locker room, and all of a sudden you're taking number 18's place, right? Who may have been one of the best leaders of all time in the National Football League in terms of, you know, demanding excellence by everybody around him. And now you're a snot-nosed college guy that, you know, 2 weeks ago was, you know, popping your pimples on in front of the mirror in your dorm room, mm-hmm. and now you're talking to these guys. It's a whole nother deal. So you better, if you're the Broncos, to me, Elway has got to go after Cousins, and I mean go after him strong. And it's going to be interesting to watch how that you know, competition goes, because it's going to get expensive real fast.
Let's talk briefly just about that defense, Jeff, because it is a defense that is built around Von Miller. It's very, very good in the secondary, as we know, with Aqib Talib and Bradley Roby, Chris Harris Jr. there in the secondary. But it could be even better next year, because Shane Ray, who had a good year the previous season, missed much of last year with injury, and he only had one sack last year, Jeff. So this is a unit that could potentially be right back at the very top, couldn't it, in 2018?
I agree with you. I think they can. I think they got to find they're a linebacker short of being dominant.
Yeah.
You know, they have not really, you know, that's the one area when you look at them. You know, I always talk about the three levels of the defense, and they're outstanding in the front. They're outstanding in the back end. And I think they're good at linebacker. They're not great at linebacker, and they're a great linebacker away from being a team that, you know, can become a truly dominant defense. That's a defense, you look at them, you know, and they struggle sometimes against the tight end. They, you know, they struggle sometimes in those one-on-one matchups underneath.
Yep.
And whether it's a back or a tight end or, you know, whatever. So if they can find one of those kinds of guys, I think that can, you know, they can take that next step into eliteness as a defense, if you will. But, you know, the fact that they're as good as they are and have gotten absolutely zero help from the offense is, you know, to me an indication. Now, I will say this. I don't think they're as nasty on defense as they were 2 years ago or 3 years ago, certainly.
Yep.
I think they're good. I think they're, you know, obviously anytime you've got Vaughn Miller, you've got and Shane Ray, and, you know, you've got some edge pass rush ability, which is what everybody's looking for. And Crick and those guys inside, Wolf are tough, strong guys that will push it and all that stuff. But when they had Malik Jackson and they had DeMarcus Ware, and they were nasty.
They wanted to destroy you.
Yeah, they were big and physical. They're fast. I mean, Shane Ray's fast. He's got the great foot step, you know, and all that. Sean, you know, but I'm going to tell you something. I loved them. I loved them when they were bigger and stronger and nastier inside, and that's again, I just didn't see the same kind of physicalness out of them last year that you know, I've seen in the past. And I'm sure some of that, Neil, was because they were, you know, on the field so darn much.
Yeah. Jeff, I don't want to pick splinters out of my backside all day as I sit on the fence, but I'm going to go arrow sideways again. I just feel this is a talented team treading water until they get quarterback position fixed. Where are you going with the Broncos?
I'm going to say until they get that quarterback situation fixed and until they fix the offensive line, I'm going to say it's a arrow down team. And, you know, Bronco Nation is going to be hot about that. But, I mean, really, we haven't even talked about the head coach, right? And
yeah.
And he's one of my guys. You know, I coached him. But, you know, Vance did not have a stellar rookie season as a head coach.
Jeff, there was a great quote from John Elway talking about Vance Joseph and how he hopes that he'll grow in his second year as a head coach. And you'll appreciate this coming from all your years in the business as a coach. Elway said that being a head coach for the very first time in the NFL is like trying to drink water through a fire hose.
and I think that's really true. I sat in that corner chair, too young, right? So it comes at you hard and fast. And let me tell you something. When it comes, you can't say, hey, give me a second here to get my, get my stuff together.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't work that way. And you know what? What concerns me about Vance is he's got a couple guys in the Denver media that appear to have an agenda in terms of, he's not ready. This is a bad hire. Da 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 da. And when that happens, when you got guys, and I don't know, other than if it's something personal or what it is, but he's got some guys that are after him in that media, and that's not a good place to be because, they are the ones that really form public opinion in your marketplace. And I just think that he's going to have an outstanding season too, and have to have an outstanding off season. And not just, here's the thing, right? Again, not being critical, just being, just making an observation. I think he's a guy that can win the press conference, right? But that only gets you through a short time.
Mm.
At some point, just like a politician, there has to be substance to what you say. And that's what concerns me with Vance. He's going to have one of those, watershed moments in his coaching career where he's going to have to stand up, be tough, be honest, and deliver the goods. And right now he hasn't had that moment. And I think all head coaches, if they're going to have longevity, all have that time in their career.
All right, let's move on to the New York Jets. Just to finish off our state of the franchise for this week, the Jets went 5-11 last season, last place in the AFC East. Offense was 28th, 19th in rushing, 24th in passing. Defense was 25th. They were 24th against the run, 21st against the pass. When you look at the Jets, they've got good salary cap situation, fourth best in the NFL. They got $73.2 million to spend. Jeff, this is a team that no one gave a chance at the start of the season, and they finished 5-11, so they ended up in fourth place in the AFC East. But this was a team that around mid-season, with Josh McCown at quarterback, they were kind of flirting with being competitive. Now, Josh McCown is 39 years old. That's where you start, isn't it? He's a free agent about to test the market. He might be back in New York. Jets may go another direction with quarterback. They're in the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes as well. First of all, Todd Bowles and what they did with Josh McCown, but I guess quarterback remains, as it has been for years in New York, the big question mark.
Yeah, and, let's talk first. To me, where you're going to start with this team is the head coach. And I thought Todd Bowles, man, to get five wins out of that bunch is an amazing accomplishment, I think, personally.
Mm.
And, here's a guy that, maybe because of his personality or whatever, you really don't, not a guy that everybody goes, ooh, Todd Bowles, right? But how in God's name he got five wins out of that team is amazing to me. And they were competitive against everybody they played. They had chances. They had New England. They took New England to the wire.
Mm.
And, they had a bad roster. They had a 38 or 9-year-old quarterback. They had, you just hit us with the statistics, right? Did they finish higher than 20th in any category in the league? And yet, they were a competitive football team, and they played hard, and they had a bunch of, and frankly, he had some guys that, weren't easy guys to deal with in the locker room, and some of them are gone now, and he'll continue to reshape that roster. But I thought Todd Bowles did an outstanding job, and I think this is going to be really interesting to see where this team goes forward, because like you say, they got a bunch of space in the cap, and New York is a destination spot for free agents, mm-hmm. and Todd Bowles is a guy that I think a lot of players want to play for.
Matt Forte has retired at running back. They still have Bilal Powell there at running back. Robbie Anderson led the team last year, Jeff. 63 catches, 941 yards, and 7 touchdowns. He's currently in legal quagmire. He faces 9 charges for some off-the-field legal incidents in Florida in January. So there's question marks about him, and we know they've just moved on from Muhammad Wilkerson. So, I mean, this is another team that we probably should revisit in a few weeks' time, isn't it? Because we're going to see how they play out over free agency. That's going to be huge for this club.
Yeah, it is. And I think they're still trying to, you know, I think there's a residual effect that's been, you know, what the Jets were 4 or 5 years ago is they're still trying to clean all that up. And, you know, that they need to get, this is a team in transition, a team that's going to structure their roster, is, you know, trying to build it the way they want to see it built. And it's a team in transition. There's a lot of stuff that needs to get done here. You know, you start going, you look at the football team and you say, Kelvin Beachum's a good player. He's not a great player, but he's a good player. You can live with him. You know, I like Bill Alpau. I think he's a good football player. You know, I'm not an Austin Seferian Jenkins guy. That's just me. I don't think he's ever had the kind of career that his talent would dictate that he have, and you've got to wonder why. You know, so this is a team, go through the football team. There's some areas where you've got to say you got to get better, certainly, a bunch of them. But I also think this is a team that can get better. They've got to draft well, Neil, not just go through the free, you know, we talk about free agency all the time. I love free agency. But free agency is expensive, and in a lot of cases, you're overpaying for guys that are, you know, you're paying for what the guy did 2 and 3 years ago in his career, not what he's able to do today. And you got to be really, really cautious in free agency. I think this team has to draft well and mix, you know, free agents in and continue to build as they go forward. But, you know, again, the quarterback position is going to be the one, to me, that everybody's going to watch, because if, you know, if there just aren't guys, they're just, I mean, beyond Cousins, who is it? You know, who's the one you're going to say is the guy that's going to give you the shot and, you know, the shot and the offense that you need?
And Jeff, if they find that quarterback, that's going to give the Jets an identity that they maybe they're lacking at the moment. You look down their roster and, you know, I struggle to see who the franchise player is at the moment. If, you know, Muhammad Wilkerson was a pro bowler and an all pro, and they've moved on from him. They really like Leonard Williams, of course, on defense. But, you know, there's no kind of face of this franchise. And maybe that's what ultimately they're searching for. Feels like they've been looking for a quarterback for decades.
Well, I agree with you. As you were talking, I started going through the Rolodex in my brain. And, I mean, Richard Todd, nope. Vinny Testaverde, nope. You know, as you go through it, Boomer Esiason, nope. I mean, how many have we seen? I mean, we've seen it all. We've seen, you know, like I said, first round draft choices in Richard Todd and veteran free agents in Boomer Esiason and Vinny Testaverde, and none of them have been able to get this team over the hump. This is an organization that needs to get a, you know, a franchise guy and make him the guy and stick with him and build around him. But it's never Mark Sanchez. I mean, go on and on and on and on and on through their history. And it just seems like it's one stopgap after another. And I think for the Jets to get back to being the Jets that, you know, of 1968 or whatever that year was when they shocked the Colts, They got to start at that position, because it is the most important position in football.
Yeah, I'm probably going to say, you know, I think with this team, Jeff, again, they're treading water until they find the quarterback position answer. But because it's the Jets, I'm going to have to go arrow down. I'm a bit worried, actually. If Kirk Cousins joins the New York Jets, Jeff, I'm going to have to root for the Jets, because I like Kirk a lot.
Somehow that would be poetic justice.
I might have to drop him a text. I might have to send him a text. Where are you going with this team, Jeff?
I'm going to say Errol inching upward. And the reason I say that is because of Todd Bowles, frankly. I think I have so much belief in his ability to lead players. And, you know, as they clean this thing up and they continue to move forward and hopefully find a quarterback and all the other things that they've got to get done. And he's got a long, 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 long laundry list of places where they need to improve. I just really think that they can improve. I just think it's going to be a process. It's a long process, Jets fans.
Let's take a couple of questions from the mailbag just to finish off. One from Mark Oakland, who's revisiting the Saquon Barkley discussion. He says, given the Browns' various needs, would you still take Saquon Barkley at first overall or wait and take a running back later?
Well, you look at this and you say, that it sounds like they're out of the Cousins deal. So now you're out of the Cousins deal. You got to get the best football team you can get. I don't see, they can talk about, Josh Allen could probably throw the football from here to the moon. I don't care, right? I watched him play as a college player at Wyoming against Mountain West caliber players, right? Not against SEC players or Pac-12 players or Big Ten players, ACC. I'm talking about against Mountain West conference corners. And I don't see a guy there that, yes, he has arm talent. Yes, he can do some things physically. Yes, 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 yes. But I just do not see, I just don't see in any of the three of them. I think there are questions in all three of those guys. If you're saying Darnold, Rosen, and Josh Allen are your top three, give me the best football players you can, and then we'll work with the quarterback. If that means you got to go find another veteran that can, just understand that the first thing you got to do at the position is not throw it to the guys in the other colored shirt. You got a starting point, right? And then put as many good players around him as you possibly can. They may have to wait. The Browns may have to wait another year for the quarterback if they can't get Cousins. And so in that time period, I think to me the smart move would be don't overdraft at the position again. Draft the best football players you can, and then say, okay, we have to wait one more year for that quarterback. We're going to do it. All right. Just try and get whoever you got playing quarterback for you to understand, like I said, hey, the key thing is throw it to the color, to the guys in the brown shirts, not to the other team.
Browns could do worse than go back to Josh McCown. He's a free agent this year, and they have,
You know what, Neil? You're exactly right. Because, with that group of cast-offs that he was playing with, really, which is what they were, he completed over 60% of his passes. He single-handedly kept them in some games, just, with his experience and his competitiveness. And, that to me is, I think you make a great point right there, a great point.
Last question for the mailbag today comes from Rob Thomas, who says, how much do the Chiefs' trades this offseason represent a rebuild era, or are they still in win-now mode? So we've seen the Chiefs trade away Alex Smith, the quarterback, to the Washington Redskins, and Marcus Peters to the Los Angeles Rams. Are the Chiefs rebuilding, Jeff, or do they still believe that those moves have improved their team and they are still in win-now mode?
Well, I think they're in win-now mode, but the Peters trade, I understand more because of all the stuff they had to deal with with him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the average, I don't think a lot of people really understand how, you go back in Marcus Peters' history, he's a guy as good a player as he is that thrown off of his college team. And the coaches at Washington told the NFL scouts when they came in there, do not touch the kid. He is toxic. Right? That's how strong they were about it. And the Chiefs took a chance. And yes, he does make plays. Why do you trade a guy that makes as many plays at corner as he does? Well, because there's other stuff that outweigh that ability. Mm-hmm. Finally, you just wear out your welcome. So that one I can understand. But the thing about trading Alex Smith to me still, I think that's one they're gonna rue that day a little bit, because I just don't know if I don't know if the next guy's ready. Again, you're talking about Neil. And I said this when we were at the Super Bowl. Here's a guy thrown for less than 300 yards, hasn't thrown a touchdown pass in the NFL yet, and you're giving him the keys to a pretty nice car.
Right.
Right? And it's not a Lamborghini, but it's not a Volkswagen either.
It's a decent enough car to drive around for sure. We'll see how that all plays. We'll see how that all plays out. Jeff, we're out of time. In fact, we're probably over time on this week's Inside the Huddle. So we'll be back next week, right on the eve of the new league year and the opening of free agency. We'll have three more teams in the state of the franchise. I'm not going to lie to you, I don't have those teams in front of me, but you will be surprised come next week. until then, say goodbye to the good folks, Coach.
Aloha.